come on. I said, I tried a little bit of everything. I said, I may be doing literature 1 month. I may be cheering. I may be this, that. But I said, and she says, but yes, you go all. And I said, I'm just another Al-Anon, and don't you ever forget it. Don't put the burden on me to put me on a pedestal, because I have just been given a gift to be able to share with you. But when you share in your meeting, what you say in that meeting be more important than anything I'll say this whole weekend. You never know how God's going to use you. You never know. And sometimes it's just seeing that smiling face. We had a guy come, and he was supposed to speak at the meeting, and he got there an hour and a half before the meeting. So when we were there opening up, he's there. And I, what's the matter? He said, I'm scared to death to talk. So I thought I would hug everybody that come in. So by the time that I got up to talk, I'd know everybody. They wouldn't be a stranger. And so when he got up to talk, he says, they're all my friends. Now I can share. You see, those kind of things. Be that one to go over and to give that person a hug. And when you see they're having a hard time, ask them, you know, can I share with you after the meeting? Would you like to talk? Do you have my phone number? You know, sometimes we get with our favorite few and we talky-talky-talk with our favorite few. And we don't, you know, anytime I see anybody in the meeting, I don't know who they are. I want to go over and say, I'm Mary Pearl. Who are you? You know, is this your first meeting? Sometimes they'll say, oh, no, I've been in a long time. Well, welcome to Rose City, because I know you're new here because I'm here all the time. So I know who the newcomers are, or the first-timers, or the visitors, or what have you, because it's the people that you don't know. And what's so fun to me is to have somebody come who's been in a workshop or a conference or something where I've seen them at some point, and they said, we were coming through Arkansas, and I just said, we got to go to Mary Pearl's group. I said, that's not the name of the group. The name of the group is the Rose City Big Book Black Belt Al-Anon Family Group. If you can say it three or four times without stumbling over it, that's good, you know. They also, they have nicknames for us. They call us the Rose City Rubbers. Because somebody may be sitting there and rubbing you on the back if you're having a hard time. We believe in the power of the human touch. We'll say, could you stand a pat or a rub? And you'd be surprised how nice that is sometimes. And I can remember when I would go to those meetings, and I was the third member of the Rose City group. The other two are gone. So we're celebrating our 30th anniversary this month. In fact, 2 weeks from Monday, we will be having our 30th anniversary. And it was amazing, though, because, you know, some days I'd be having a hard time, and all I had to do was pull up and park in front of the building, and it's safe because you know there's going to be a meeting, you're going to be okay. That feeling of being safe. It says to practice the spiritual principles. You know, what are those spiritual principles? Does anybody ever tell you what the spiritual principles are? Does anybody know what the spiritual principles are? Well, the program principles to me are honesty, love, dedication, freedom, happiness, joy, dignity, integrity, self-discipline, acceptance, surrender, hope, spirituality, faith, anonymity, humility. The list can go on and on and on. It's all of those things that come together, you know, to make it what it is. And I can tell you another thing. If I couldn't have had fun in recovery, I wouldn't have stayed. Fellowship is different than working the steps. You can go to the meetings, but you can't live forever on the fellowship. It's sort of like having handrails to the steps. You know, the things you can hang on to, the slogans and the fellowship you can hang on to, but you got to walk the steps. The steps is where the program is. And I love it when I get 12-step calls, and they'll talk for an hour, and they'll scream and whine and tell you how bad it is in their life, and I'll say, we have a meeting tomorrow night at 6:30. Well, I couldn't possibly come. That's my bowling night. Well, supper, bitch. Lots of compassion. But you know, sometimes, don't despair. You know, for all of the 12-step calls you get, if you get one out of 12 that'll actually get to a meeting, or one that'll stay, that's a miracle. You know, Because people have to be ready. You know, they have to be where they don't have any other options a lot of times. You know, and they come sometimes when they're uncomfortable. But when you come when you're desperate, it makes an altogether different story. You know, because people who are desperate will grasp at any life preserver that's thrown at them, you know. We'll do that. There's a girl that used to call me, and she lived out of town in another part of our state. And she would run away from home and come to Little Rock and check in a motel. And she'd call me, and they'd call me from the answering service, and I'd 12-step her. And finally, I got to where I said, why are you even bothering to call them? Why don't you just call me to start with? And she says, well, I feel so bad because I've not gotten to a meeting, and you've talked to me 3 or 4 times. And I said, well, I tell you what, this will be the last time I'll talk to you. Now, what do you think about that? She says, oh, my God. I said, that's right. I said, you know, if I give you a meeting over the telephone, you don't have to go to a meeting. And I said, we've done this little dance too many times. Well, several years later, I got a card from this girl, and she was in another state. And she said, I just wanted you to know I've been elected the GR for my group, and I've been up here for 2 years. And she said, I finally got to Al-Anon, and I wanted you to know that all of those calls you made were for not for nothing. Because when I really, really needed it, I knew where to go to get it. So see, you never know. Those calls, see, you think sometimes it's frustrating because you can't get them to go, but you never know. But every time you show up for a meeting and you participate, you know, I like for people to, everybody has an opportunity to participate. Just sitting there like on a log won't get it any better. You know, usually when I'm sponsoring newcomers, I'll tell them, you know, honey, you don't have anything we want. So you shut up and you listen for a while. And when you have something to share, we'll let you know. And they'll look at me and I'll say, come on. What I'm saying is, if you will not take up meeting time with problems and instead spend meeting time with solutions, everybody will hear what they need to hear. I said, but if we get off on trying to fix your problems at the meeting, a lot of people's situations are not going to be addressed. And it's not just about you. But everybody here needs to be able to get something and take it from the meeting. Did you know, I hear people make the statement, I've never been to a bad meeting, and I thank God you hadn't been to enough meetings. Because I've been to some bad meetings over the years, you know. And the thing about it is, you can learn something from a bad meeting. You can learn how not to be. You can learn what to do, what not to do, how to be, how not to be. You can learn something in any one of those meetings. You know, but I tell people that are new, I'll say, listen when you go to the meetings. And then after the meeting, we'll talk about what you've heard. And we'll see what you can take home tonight for you. And, you know, my sponsor drove me nuts one night. I told her, I said, I can't go to the meeting. And she said, okay. And it wasn't a big deal. I mean, I was going every night. And when I got home that night, I called her and I said, well, what did I miss? And she said, I don't know. I said, didn't you go? She said, oh, yeah, I went and I got what I needed. I will never know what you missed. That's mean, you know. And that's true because everybody, you know, it's real funny. You'll hear what you need to hear in the meeting. You'll hear what you need to hear if you're listening. But if you're there and somebody is going into this litany of he and they and it and what and talking about problem, 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 then being the helpful people we are, you're going to have 50 solutions or as many as you got people there on how to solve that problem. And so now it's been so-and-so's meeting. It hadn't been the group meeting. So that's the reason that we believe in focusing on recovery instead of on sickness. And then the joy of working with others. I got a 12-step call, and this girl was saying she thought her husband was an alcoholic, and she didn't know what to do. And I said, well, I'll tell you what. There's a meeting tomorrow night. I'll pick you up, and we'll go. And so I went by and picked her up, and I'm a toucher. You know, I'm a patter, toucher. And so when she got in the car, I reached over, and I patted her on the leg, and I said, it'll be okay. She almost jumped out the car. She was the kind, if people knocked on her door, she hid under her bed. Literally. She was terrified. And she was the first person that came to our group that didn't have someone in AA. Did you know that years ago, everybody in that was in Al-Anon had somebody in AA? It was mainly the spouses of alcoholics. We didn't have the brothers, sisters, kids, aunts, uncles, dogs, gerbils. We didn't have all that then. It was just the people who had someone in there. And so we were in great shape. And another thing, I received lots and lots of help by going to the open AA meetings, because the members of Alcoholics Anonymous could not have been more welcoming and loving to Al-Anon. A lot of that changed over the years in various locations and what have you. And that's a sad comment. But I think it was because, like for instance, in my home group, when we started, we were in the back corner of the room with a petition. And the AAs were meeting up in the front, the same room at the same time, because it's just one big room. And so there was only three of us, and we decided that we got tired of them yelling, "Shut up back there in the peanut gallery." And I said, "Why don't we have the meetings over at my house? I'm only six blocks away. And they can drop y'all off and then pick you up on the way back. And when they'd pick them up, they'd all stay over and we'd have all this fellowship and everything at the house." And we did that for a couple of years till I evicted the group. We outgrew my home. It became too much of a hassle every week. I said, "Do you realize that everybody here has a choice if they want to go to the meeting but me? It's in my house." And I said, "Y'all get up, you walk out, you leave your coffee cups sitting around, you leave your ashtray sitting around. This isn't the way you would do a real meeting, and I resent it, and I want you to do something." And so for two meetings, they did, and then they went right back, so I evicted them. Best thing we ever did. Because what we did, we found out, you know, we could meet on another night besides the nights that the AAs met. And people who wanted to come to Al-Anon came to Al-Anon because they wanted to go to Al-Anon instead of someplace to go while Daddy was in a meeting. And then we begin to get all the different ones that are coming in, the brothers, the sisters, the children, the aunts, the uncles. We begin to get more when we weren't just doing husband and wife in AA and Al-Anon. You know, so it has something to be said for it. But you got to remember, people may be doing the very best they can for where they're at the time. Sometimes that's not very good, you know. And sometimes, one of my pet peeves in a meeting is when we have a newcomer and somebody will say, "You're the most important person in the group." The newcomer is not the most important person in the group. If everybody were newcomers in the group, who would have anything to give the newcomers? And we tell it's a fellowship of equal, but you're the most important in the group. I'm saying, no, everyone is important in the group. No one is more important. And if there aren't there people there who have programmed to give the newcomer, what have we got? You know, what have we got? But yes, they're the new lifeblood of the program, the new ones coming in. But if you don't have your old ones to give the new ones something, then what have you got? You know. And then I'm responsible to pass on the message as it was given to me. That was undiluted. When I came in, we were Al-Anon. That's it. Al-Anon. We weren't children of, aunts of, uncles of, dogs of. We weren't. We were Al-Anon, and we did the Al-Anon program. We didn't diversify into all this stuff and dilute our program down. We didn't have to have separate pieces of literature for every kind of situation in the world. Al-Anon is Al-Anon. You work the Al-Anon program, you get the benefits of the Al-Anon program. Because in our hearts, we all are just hearts that hurt. That's what my sponsor told me when I came in. I told her, I said, "I don't think I want you to sponsor me because you're black and I'm a racist. And that's just not going to work." And she says, "Well, you know, in here, we're not colors. We're not religions. We're none of those things. We're hearts that hurt. And a heart that hurts knows no boundaries." And because of her, I learned to love all people, all colors, all creeds, all everything. It was just what I needed. Just what I needed. And newcomers, you got to remember, you're only hearing one part of the story when you listen to newcomers. It was amazing to me. I was sponsoring this girl. I went to an open AA meeting. Her husband spoke, and I wouldn't have known that was her husband. Not from the way she described him. I would never have got it. So just remember, you're only hearing one side of the story on a lot of this stuff. But your best asset is always going to be your experience. Because in God's hands, the darkest path can be the key to life and happiness for others. When we're willing to open up and share the darkness of our soul, it gives the other person's permission to bring that darkness out to the light of their soul. That is one of the neatest things. And financial recovery is possible too. I've seen miracles there, you know. And God has always blessed us. And then I've learned how to have fun like I never had before. I'm telling you, there's nothing more fun than to get a bunch of crazy alcoholics and Al-Anons together having a good time. I have a girl I sponsor in Idaho. And we go up there and we have a family raft trip down Hell's Canyon on the Snake River, which is world-class rafting. I mean, we have rapids that you won't believe. And I mean, you go completely under. And that is more fun. It's 100 and some odd degrees outside and that water is 60 degrees. You think, and we have water fights going down the river. We get water cannons and kill one another. Just drown one another with ice cold water. It's just more fun. As I say, I love adventure. You know, I'm still into that. Some of the miracles that have happened is like JD and my relationship. I have a relationship with my husband I never dreamed possible. If you'd have been asking me what all I wanted out of a relationship, I would have shortchanged myself. I would have shortchanged myself. JD and I will be married 37 years in November. And I promised myself I would never give more than 7 years continuous service to any one man. You know, I promised myself that. But there it is. You know, one time I asked JD, I said, we'd been married about 6 years at the time. And I asked him, I said, what do you see us doing 20 years from today? He said, hell, I only got one more year to go. I'm out. You know, that seven-year deal. You know. Oh, now, and here's a woman who could not have any natural children. Now, you know, that was one of those things that bugged me for a long time. And then I saw your children, and I was grateful. And I don't have the patience to deal with little children. I really don't. God knew that. It was a blessing for everybody, trust me. But I have my children of the Spirit, and those are the people that I sponsor, and they sponsor, and they sponsor. I have 11 generations of sponsorship. And I'm so grateful because I've got, like for instance, I was able to meet some of my grandkids this weekend that I didn't know existed, and a great-grandkid that was here. That's just been super, super wonderful to me, the sponsorship family. I have friends all over the world, absolutely all over the world. I get emails from places that I've never even heard of before, and they'll call and they'll say, I know you because I have your tapes. And you see, y'all know me better than my own family ever knew me, because I could be me with you. I didn't have any other axe to grind with my family for a long, long time. I take vacations. And there's a couple out in California that JD and I go on vacations with. They'll come to Arkansas and we leave from Arkansas, or we'll go to California and leave from there. And best friends that we never knew each other before the program, you know, and we met at a conference, those kind of things. My sister and I decided in 1980 that we wanted to go to Hawaii. And we enjoyed that so much, Dorothy and I were able to go back eight times and spend a month in one of the most beautiful spots in the world. Wouldn't want to live there forever because I like seasons, but it is a beautiful, beautiful place, and I have lots of fun memories and stories for that. I have fun memories of when my mother was in the nursing home. Now, you know, a nursing home is usually sort of a down, you think, but the nursing home where Dorothy is the same one mother was, and my mother was... she had had strokes, and she couldn't talk or anything, but she was not paralyzed at that point. And she would make great escapes from the nursing home. And there's a Sonic Drive-In a few blocks away. And so she went hot-footing it down there one day, and she got in the car with a lady at the Sonic Drive-In. Now, she's in her little flip-flops and her house coat and her gown, and my mother can't talk because her throat's paralyzed, but she goes, wee-wo, wee-wo, wee-wo. She makes this sound. So she gets in the car with this woman. She's going, wee-wo, 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 wee-wo. And the woman pushed the button, and she said, help, help. There's a nut in the car with me. And the police arrived about the same time the team from the nursing home did, you know. They had figured that's where the commotion was. That's where mother was. And they called me, and they said, you've got to do something with your mother. And I laughed. I said, I've never been able to do anything with my mother. I am powerless. But you know, I have a memory too of that last Christmas. Now, my mother, who didn't love me, gave me 18 years of music lessons. She made all the sacrifices. She wanted me to be a concert pianist. I trained to be one. I would have been one, but she wanted it too much. That rebellion, you know, I'm not going to do it because that's what you want. And so I played for my amusement and your amazement, you know. And I did that for years and years. But anyway, while mother was in the nursing home, it was Christmas and Christmas Eve, and we had ice and snow, and they said, don't anybody get on the road. And I said, I can get on the road and drive. I lived in Newfoundland. I can do this deal. And so I get my portable keyboard, and I go down to the nursing home, and I set it up, and I want you to know they love music. The people at the nursing home really respond to music. And so I'm playing all of this, and at this point, my mother's paralyzed pretty much, and she doesn't know who I am most of the time. And sometimes I don't either, you know how that goes. But anyway, I'm down there, I'm playing, and I happen to look over, and Mama is keeping time with the music. My mama knew I was there. Because, see, Mama used to tell me at Christmas, she'd say, Mirapol, go in there and play. I want to see my investment. So I would always play for her at Christmas. And so that's what I gave my mother. And my mother knew I was there, and that was her gift to me. And she died on the 1st of February after that. And you know something? I was okay. Why was I okay? Because my mother was released from that body that was of no value to her. And perhaps now my mother could be happy, joyous, and free because she was out of this life. I often wish that she would have come to Al-Anon or gotten some help, but my mother was not going to do that. But you know, the bottom line was I was, and so I was able to give her unconditional love, which was, there's not anybody in this world that doesn't respond to unconditional love. And I was able to be okay. And my sister and I were standing there in the visitation room. Everybody had left. And my mother had one byword, and it was shit. She'd get aggravated. That's what would come out. And Dorothy, my mother's sister, was there. And this crazy funeral director had said that the first thing people do when they go in to see a visitation is they want to know if the person looks natural. And I'm thinking, no, they look dead. They don't look natural. You've never seen them quite like this before. How could they look natural? See, that's my mind, you know. I'm not saying anything. I'm just going, And then, she says, and then they will look to see if the chest is moving. I think, Jesus, if the chest is moving, we're all in trouble. So, Dorothy and I were laughing about that after everybody had left. And I said, you know what Mama's test would be? And Dorothy says, what? I said, watch. So I go up there and I pat her on the hand. I said, okay, Mama, say shit. And I looked at Dorothy. She's dead. She didn't say it. She's dead. That's it. There's the test for Mama. And we got to laughing so hard. We were down and just squalling, laughing. And the funeral director thought we were in grief. And she came in. She's trying to console us. We're going, shut up. Go away. Those are funny memories, you know. I've learned to be comfortable in my own skin. I've learned to be comfortable with other people. And I can just be me. You know, not every, you know, I've come to realize in this life that not everybody's going to like you no matter what you do. And there's some that's going to like you no matter what you do. So, there you are. So, I'm going to be happy with those that like me and those that don't. You got a problem. Ain't mine. And I found out, too, when I got my heart problem, that I made a whole new bunch of friends at the rehab hospital. At the water aerobics. Nearly everybody was there because they had some kind of problem. They were all earth people, if you will. And they were super nice. And I have a lot of friends that are not necessarily in Al-Anon, but they're living spiritual way of life. You can always tell. They're the people who are upbeat, who are happy, who are not bitching and complaining about everything. And some days I can be one of those. But these were all the things I would have missed if I hadn't have loved an alcoholic. And I can remember when I came in and people said, I love an alcoholic. I thought, you crazy, crazy person. Or I'm glad that my husband's an alcoholic, you know, something like that. Well, let me tell you, of all the diseases that you can have, I'm glad my husband is an alcoholic, because it was a disease that would bring a way of life for me. And I'm just selfish enough to want that, you know? I can have a life that is better beyond anything I've ever known because my husband is an alcoholic. Over the last few years, we've lost a lot of friends. We've seen people after 25 years go back out and drink again. It's so sad, but it's a disease. See, that's the thing you have to remember, and it's a very patient disease. It's always waiting. But I've also seen people. How many people are still coming to your group that were there when you first came? I was looking at that the other day, and I'm saying, you know, I bet you I know 200 people that have come in and out of our group over the years and are not there today. But I am, you know, because I still get what I need. I still get my spiritual feeding. I'm still with my family, and I'm so grateful. I am so grateful that I have a family, because you see, Dorothy is my only living relative, natural kin left. And other than JD, with us having no children, that's it. But do you know I have a worldwide family? A worldwide family. That is amazing to me. People that I love and people who love me. You know, like say JD's gotten diabetes, and they told me last December that I'm borderline, so we had to rearrange all of how we live and do one more time. But you know, we feel better and we're in better health. My doctor says, you are just amazing. He says, you got such a will. I said, let me tell you about will. He says, well, when I tell you to do something, I know you're going to do it. And I said, well, why else? I said, do you think I'm going to come here, spend money, and then not do what I'm told to do? I said, that would be crazy, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it? You know, why go to the doctor if you're not going to? And at the thing, I've had so many neat highs, you know. It's like I've been to Toronto many times, and every time I would go, I would get to see Phantom of the Opera so many times. And it's like I was doing prearrangements for my sister, and I said, might as well take care of mine too while I'm here. And the guy says, well, what would you like? And he said, and I said, oh, well, somebody will show up to do the deal. And he said, like who? And I said, oh, I don't know, but somebody will show up. And he says, we don't do things like that. I said, oh, yeah, we do, though. You know, it's like, how do I know who will want to officiate or whatever? I said, that's not up to me. And he said, well, do you have a music? Oh, yes, I want, Music of the Night from Phantom of the Opera, and I'd like Little Darlings by the Diamonds. He says, what is that? I said, oh, little darling, oh, little darling. He said, at a wake, and I said, oh, yeah, it wakes the dead. I love it. I said, it's one of my favorites. I said, I'll bring you a copy so you'll have it on hand. They just don't understand us, you know, that we don't have to be in a rut, or we don't have to be like everybody else. You know, we can do our deals. And I want you to know that I'm real appreciative to get to come up here to Canada, because there's a lot of people that I love up here in Canada and that are very special to my heart. My dogs that I have today, in November of 1991, the 1st of November, I came up here and I got my two dogs. I got them in Arthur, Ontario. I'm willing to go to any length to get a dog. 5-day trip, get a dog, you know. I love that. I tell you one thing I had that was so funny. I was over at Bonnie's house one time and she says, would you like the skinny dip? I said, I haven't been skinny dipping since I was a kid. She said, we got a pool in the back. It's dark. My husband's not here. It's just us. I said, but there's planes flying over. She said, they're like ants in the sky. I said, okay. So we got out there and I said, oh my God, Bonnie, boobs float. I found pieces of skin I didn't know I had. Well, the last time I skinny dipped, I didn't have any boobs, for God's sake. We had more fun. We laughed and we laughed. And then one time I was coming and I got over to Detroit and Bonnie picked me up at the airport, and it was Mother's Day, and she's got a surprise for you. And I said, what? She took me to see the Phantom in Detroit. So special, so special. These are my kids. These are my children of the Spirit. And I could not be happier. I just could not be happier. And during all these changes, the one constant thing that I've had in my life has been my Al-Anon program and my higher power. Those are the two things that I can always fall back on. My higher power and my Al-Anon program. When the chaos is going, I can always center in because I have something that is always there, that's always constant. And to me, there's something real comforting about that. And so, like I say, JD and I will, on our anniversary, if God willing, if we're so both here, on the 7th of November is our anniversary, but we always celebrate our anniversary on Thanksgiving weekend, the U.S. Thanksgiving weekend. It's the last Thursday of the month. And we go up to a place in the mountains there in Arkansas called Eureka Springs, and we stay in a bed and breakfast. It's a three-room suite with a hot tub and all like that, a jacuzzi. And we've laughed about it because over the years, as we've gotten older and things wear out and arthritis comes, we have to help each other in and out. Well, the sides on that tub are high, and if you got arthritis in your hip, it's hard. So you just sort of slither in, you know. And then, you know, he puts his hands under my butt and throws me out, and then I reach over and pull him out. It's hysterical. We laugh about that. But we also go up there to a place called the New Moon Spa, and we get something that is so special. We get side-by-side two-hour massages. It's called Full Radiance, and it's not like my experience down in Dallas. Ain't a man there, you know. But, I mean, this is something that, like J.D. says, when it's all over, you know, after 2 hours, you're just limp as a noodle. And he says, honey, you can spit in my face, and I'd say, I love you. And I said, would you really? And he says, please don't, please don't. I said, well, then don't say things like that. It gets my mind going. This program healed our lives. It healed our spirits. It healed our souls. We are happy, joyous, and free, and I hope you can be too.